This is undoubtedly one of the biggest treats. Many have had the opportunity already earlier this summer to hear from Rav Gav, to learn in this incredible edifice and building, and to take part in the incomparable energy of Torah of the Old City. Tonight is really a celebration of all of that. The quality time you're able to spend with your chaburas, the tfilos that we'll be able to share at the Kotel in just a few moments, and of course the learning that we'll do in the Kotel Plaza that Rabbi Leibowitz just described. All of that, and that's already amazing, will be highlighted by the opportunity again for some, and for the first time for others, to hear from Rav Gav. I promise you an experience you will never forget, even if you've heard him before. If you've heard him before, you know it to be true. If you hadn't heard him before, then you'll find out for the first time. Of the many things that make Rav Gav, who I've known for close to 20 years now, maybe 20 years, since I first met him, 22 years in DRS high school, together then, of the many incredible things, I will share with you just one, only because I don't want to take any of his time that is so valuable, his time in general, and our opportunity to hear from him. People come from far and wide to this building because of the views. Right behind me in this window, it's very distracting. You probably can't see it from your seat, but as Rabbi Leibowitz was speaking and we were getting ready to start, you just look out this window and you get mesmerized because you could see things from this building that you cannot see anywhere else. You have a vantage point and a perspective on things that we have seen before and experienced before that is at the same time radically different than anything we have ever seen before. I can think of no more fitting introduction to Rav Gav than to repeat that sentence again. From this building and this room, even if we were to close the shades and eliminate the windows, from this building and in this room, with leaders and teachers like Rav Gav, you can see things in a way that you have never seen them before. There are few people in the Jewish community who have as fresh a perspective, as unique a way of looking at the world, who are capable of making us think differently about the things that we see and the things we experience in Judaism and in life on a regular basis than Rav Gav does. He has always been, going back to that 11th grade shiur room in DRS, he has always been one of most of the original creative thinkers that I have ever met in my entire life, and the Jewish community has benefited tremendously from that talent of his and his ability to do that and to share it with so many far and wide. Dozens, hundreds, thousands of people walk through this building and their first experience with Judaism is hearing from Rav Gav, who shares with them a perspective that they have never heard before. People who have been religious their entire lives will listen to Rav Gav and hear about things that they have been experiencing and thinking about their entire lives in a way they never have before. Not only is he entertaining and not only is he insightful, but the unique, fresh perspective that he shares to us on the things that we understand so well is what make him such a highlight for so many and make his presentations as valuable as they are. Please give your attention to Rav Gav Friedman.
Okay, good evening all.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, let's get cracking.
It was so kindly mentioned that many people, their first interaction with Judaism is when they come to this building, to my class. What was not mentioned is sometimes it's their last interaction as well. I'm not going to say because of me, but maybe. But in any event, let's get started. I want to start with a little story which you may have heard before, you may not have heard before. If you've heard it before, I have one request. For those who have seen me teach, you might know what it is. What's their request?
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. Okay, everyone knows who that guy is. Right? I heard this one. We hate you. Keep it down. Yes? So let's get started. So the story goes, and this is an unfortunate oldie but a goodie, and that is like this. There was a wedding. There was a wedding. And at this wedding, there was the father of the... Okay, the father of the bride. Father of the bride has in his pocket $10,000 cash. $10,000 cash. Why do you have that money? He had to pay off the florist. He had to pay off the photographer. He had to pay off his photographer. He had to pay off some people. So he had his money with the cash, and he starts the dancing, gets intense. I'm going to assume many of you have been to a Jewish wedding before. I shouldn't ask this in public, but I guess if you answer, it means you're comfortable. Has anyone ever been to a non-Jewish wedding before? You got a couple? You can lie, I won't know. Oh, there you go, more. All right. Who has been to a Jewish but secular wedding? Jewish secular wedding? Who's been to both a Jewish secular wedding and to a religious funeral? Oh, wait. Okay, so you've all been there. Okay, so for those who have been to both, may I ask you a question? What are you behind you? May I ask you? No, this guy in the middle. What's your name? You're wearing a shirt with a horse. Yeah, you. What's your name? What? Okay. I was just curious. Okay, now, let's get started. So, what I want to know from you, Ariel, is the following. Yeah, when you go ahead, by a religious wedding or by a secular wedding, which one does the dancing get a little crazier? The religious one. And that's even before the alcohol, where things can get a little bit nuts. The dancing gets a little bit crazy. Why is that? Why does it get crazier? Well, it's very simple. The reason why it gets crazier is because at a religious wedding, we have what's known as a mechitza, right? So what happens when you throw a mechitza in? Everybody goes crazy, right? You throw a mechitza, then all of a sudden, when you throw a mechitza in, so all of a sudden we no longer have all the fears that we may have had before. I don't remember if I shared this with you last summer, but a little idea, but there was someone in this very building that the yeshiva was decided, Eish HaTorah, they were going to take the guys on a trip to go swimming. And one of the guys was speaking to his friend, and he says to him, "Wow, this is very exciting. It's going to be the first time that I'm going to a pool, and I'm actually going to enjoy myself." So one of the rabbis overheard him saying that. He decided to ask him, "If you don't mind me asking, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but what do you mean, have you never been to a pool?" He goes, "No, I've been to a pool many times." "What do you mean it's the first time you're going to enjoy yourself?" He said, "Because this is the first time I'm going when it's only guys. I've never been to a pool and it's only guys. I grew up totally secular. It was only when there's guys and girls." He says, "So why wasn't that enjoyable?" He says, "Because think about it. What is every guy doing and every girl doing when you go to a pool and there's guys and girls there? Every guy is just like the whole time is just, you know, in that position. Doesn't matter how uncomfortable it is, you know? Where's the pool? I think it's that. I think the pool is like right over there, you know? And every girl's like, I can't breathe." And I put the whole thing. He's basically to impress the other person. So since everybody's busy impressing everyone else, no one can enjoy themselves. And when you throw a bunch of guys together and there's no girls there, they're not nervous, unless you're in the shidduch age and they're looking through. But if not, then what happens is that you actually enjoy yourself and you just go crazy. And then you drink a little water to hydrate yourself, and then you continue going a little bit crazy. So this is what happens at the wedding. They start the dancing, and the father of the bride, he's got in his jacket pocket $10,000 cash. So what happens? He's getting crazy in love, and he's getting hot. He'll finish on, he'll think we'll cut it up. It's really hot, or in Arabic. So he says, I can't deal with this anymore. So what does he do? He takes off his jacket, foreshadow, something's going to happen. He takes off his jacket and he puts it down. And he continues to dance, and he's dancing with the chassan, and he's dancing with the father of the chassan, and he tries to dance with his daughter, gets going out. And he keeps dancing and dancing, and all of a
sudden. So then what happened was, I want to introduce myself, thank you for coming. And besides the dancing, what happens? It's going crazy, and then finally they finish the first set of music. What happens when you finish the first set of music? The music ends, what does everybody do? They keep dancing. Right? They keep dancing, and then what does everyone, finally the guy gets up, and he's like, "Okay, one more time! Yes, I'm into it!" And they do this thing, and they go wild, goes all crazy, and enjoy themselves, and then they finish. Right? What do they do? Everyone continues dancing. And then the guy gets to the mic, "Everyone, please find your seats." And then they just keep dancing. So what happens, he goes, "If you don't find your seats, you will not have food." The dance floor is clear. You know, the whole thing, nah, dance floor, and then you will not have food. They drop the guy, and it's wrong, right? And everybody goes to enjoy themselves. But then what happens? Father of the bride remembers foreshadow. Do we remember? Jack in pocket, he's got mad cash, baby. $10,000. Now, first of all, for those who are a little bit older, you might know the story can't be real, because what Jewish wedding would only be $10,000? But anyway, the point is that this is the point. He goes ahead and he's like, oh, mi abrigo, which means my jacket in Spanish. He says, oh no, my jacket. So quickly he goes and he feels his friend's jacket. And what does he do? He puts a hold on. This is just for, I don't know what I'm looking for. He puts it, this is for putting on my jacket. So he goes ahead and he takes the jacket. There's an envelope.
Forget that one.
He goes ahead, he puts on the jacket quickly. Goes ahead. First thing he does is reaches for the money, puts his hand in, and money's gone. So what does he do next? Sticks his hand in the next pocket, right? He's like, oh no, money's gone. What does he do next? He just starts feeling people's pockets. And then he realizes, like, this is bad news. This is a lot of money, I can't handle it. Lockdown, lockdown. They're like, shut the door now. They lock the whole place up. They're like, we'll check every person. A little bit embarrassing, but again, 10,000. Again, if you want stuff to do for other weddings, 100 grand. So what does he do? He goes and checks every single person. At the end of the day, no one's got the cash. Some people drop their phones and whatever, but nobody has the cash. Okay, what can you do this stuff? Let's fast forward. A couple months later, by a couple, I mean more than two. 3 months later, I feel. 3 months later, the father of the Katan, of the groom. That's the other one, by the way. He gets a phone call. He says, hey, it's me, the photographer. I'm coming over. You want to make a picture for the album, things, etc. When can I come? He says, okay, come. No problem. He comes over. He hands him the little discount key thing. I used to say CD, but no one knows what kind of this are. And he sticks the thing in, whatever. He sits down. In the meantime, the photographer makes himself at home. He knows a little area to make a little drink. Pours himself a little orange juice, a little vodka. What's that called? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so he goes ahead and he makes himself a screwdriver. Long or real. Anyway, so he makes himself a little drink, he makes it home, he's chilling, relaxing, maxing, cool, and then shooting nothing in the house, but he goes ahead and he's relaxing. This guy starts to watch the video and he sits down, look right, puts his thumb in his mouth, black, and he sees the video. It was going crazy, it was going wild, we're going out of control, we're going to make it see the following, goes to the child. And all of a sudden he sees in the background, a jacket on a chair or a shender that was randomly there. And he goes ahead and he sees the father of the groom, who's that? Himself, walk over to the jacket pocket of the father of the bride, stick his hand in, take the money, bust it. Caught you red-handed. Wasn't me. Everybody get what's going on? Father of the Katan just saw himself on video stealing the $10,000. So this guy is very comfortable with his, what's it called again? Good. And, you know, he's fixing something, then he drank a little. And he's like, yeah, I saw it. The guy goes,
saw what? I don't know what you're talking about.
He's like, listen, I'm not such a bad guy. How about, let's make a deal. You cut me in, give me some of that cash, and I'll edit the video. Give me a little cash, you know what I'm saying? Don't think you can destroy this one because I have 5 more at home. And don't think you can kill me because I sent the message. If I'm going back on Tuesday, send it to the world. You're never getting out of this. How much, the question is, how much... What's your name? Nothing? How much would you pay to edit that video?
10 grand.
10 grand? She's saying this is something you would do. This is like a type of thing. See, whenever I ask girls this question, they go, I would never steal. I never ask a guy, like, I don't know, maybe 5. It's like, well, it disgusts it. You went straight for the top. You didn't ask your mom about money. Okay, so the guy goes ahead and says, I'll edit the video, pay me the money. So now there's always someone in the crowd who says, I'll just return it. It's not happening. I said, you done. You finished, toast, cook, over, my friends. Once you did this, you didn't know going back. And he said, I'll just return it. Who's going to find out about it? Forget about it. This photographer's not letting you off the hook.
But that's black male.
It is what it is. A black male, black person, you're black. Is a person or no, black. That's black human. You can't do it. No, that's black kind. That's. Anyway, it's black male, right? You're going to say, you're watching too much Jordan. Anyway, but the point is that he goes ahead and he's sucked up. What's he going to do? He's got to pay the cash. Got to pay the cash. Okay, friends, what was I talking about? So we are in a beautiful month now. What month are we in? In Hebrew. The Av. Av, for those... Av is... Av is an acronym, which stands for... Elul Ba. El is on the will, people. El is on the way. Now, what am I talking about? Well, let me share with you what I'm talking about. You see, when we die, we're going to get upstairs or downstairs. And when we get upstairs, we are going to be shown a video. That video is going to be called The Video. Period. The video of your life. And this video is then going to be put on. And who's going to be there for the video? Who's going to be there? Say again? Relatives and friends of relatives? Friends and friends of their family? Say again? Photographer. Listen down, Smith, it's next to you. Who are you? I'm a photographer. Yeah, who's going to be there? What?
Everyone!
Everyone!
Shout out,
Jew. Hashem, who? God! Be religious for you! You're gonna be there! You're gonna be there! Because the Targum says, what's the Targum? You'll see in Shana Gimel. There's something called Targum. The Targum says in the Pasuk found in Ecclesiastes, that is a Kohelet. Kohelet, and cut you from Tina. You look for Kohelet, you'll see over there at the very end of Kohelet. That there's a, okay, I'll just send up my name. Don't let me know who you are, because I'm going to get a little crazy. And it's up, it's like, get a mess. And it says, and there's a big cup, Ecclesiastes. You look at the very last passage, it says the following statement. Sof davar, hakol nishna. What does that mean? Says the target, hakol nishna. At the end, everything's going to hear it. Everybody's going to hear it all. Everyone's going to see what's going on, people. Who's going to be there? You're going to be there. Your friends and family are going to be there. A photographer randomly is going to show up. He's going to take pictures to you. I'm going to be there. We all going to be there. That, my friends, is a little bit scary for me. I don't know for you. And the question is, how much would you pay to edit that video? If you... How much would you pay to edit that video? Now, for all of you out there, like, do you mean literally a video? No, literally a video. It's whatever it is, there'll be digital surround sound, popcorn, it's everything intense. It's intense. What am I talking about? It's a Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. Which one do I ask? I'm glad you asked. Let's see. Take a look in chapter 2, Mishnah 1, I think. Yeah, chapter 2, verse 1. Says the following statement. I'm not going to read the whole thing as I just did, but. Rebbe Omer, da da da. If a person wants to stop themselves from doing an aveira, what should you do? Yisakel b'shloshat b'arivayim b'avali d'aveira. Look at three things and you won't come to sin. Da ma l'mal b'cha. Know it's above you. What is it? Ayin roe. Ozit Shamat, the home asset of Singapore, the home asset of Singapore. There you go. I don't know what you said, but sounds good. I know, watching eye, a listening ear, and everything's being written down. You could ask, like, why so worried? Just say, God is watching us. Why are you going to say, like, a watching eye? Listening ear, everything's written down. It's just simple. Everything you do is being seen, everything you say is being heard. And it's being written down, it's not going to be forgotten. Now, we have the luxury now of understanding this in real time. If you go back 500 years ago and you say to someone, if you know that you die, you're going to be shown a video of your life. What would they say? What's a video, right? But now, we very much know what it is. We're very scary how much we know what it is. And how you recognize what we're able to do with videos. Do you realize your toaster is listening to you? You understand the NSA. You guys are great. I'm not saying anything bad. You're wonderful. But they're listening. You understand. Big Brother, 1984, you know what I'm talking about. But it's real. It's a real deal, baby. We understand this in real time. Somebody once asked the Chofetz Chaim an amazing question. He said, what is the point? The Chofetz Chaim mentioned that everything that's created in this world is created for us to be able to learn something, for us to be able to understand something, in relationship particularly with us and Hashem. So somebody asked him once, well, what's the point of a telescope? What's the point of a telescope? Why would they create a telescope? He said, the point of a telescope is as follows. It used to be people would say, fine, there's a God, but that God is so far out in space that he can't hear or see anything. Comes along the telescope. For us to be able to look very, very far and see that even though we're not even close, you can see very, very far. What's the purpose of all the technology that we have? It's to make things very real. To understand these concepts. We have first-hand ability to be able to understand these concepts about how we're being watched all the time. It's unbelievable that we don't even realize how much we're being watched. I used to play a little game where before I had an old car, I used to say it. I'll just, someone got it? It's the Lexus of Israel, I'm just saying. Mazda Chamesh. Used to be the Lexus, now it's like a Sierra. But, that's what I had. Anyway, but, I had a Mazda 5, and what was so awesome about the Mazda is that it was old school lever style. Like, if you wanted to get the seat to go back and forward, it was like, it was just like, you pull up a lever or lever, kind of, and you go ahead and you go to the back and forth quickly. Do any of you drive? Do any of you not drive? Do any of you drive you're not supposed to drive? Okay, so that's where it comes. If you don't drive, you know what I'm talking about very much so. If you do drive, you don't talk about very much so. What happens when a person gets to a red light, assuming you stop, right? You get to a red light, and there's a car next to you at the red light. So here, you get to this red light, and there's a car next to you at the red light. What do you do? What? Well, before drag race. Let's say you're going to drag race, right? That means a whole... What do you... What? Good. So what we do is, to get the eye contact, it's... You look. Now, really, you don't want it to be that the person knows you're looking because that's too awkward. So you do this little thing, right? Let's say you're driving, right? So there you go. You're driving along, and you get to the red light, and here's the car. Car's right over here. So what you do is you go like this. So you just kind of do this. You just kind of like, one of those. Now, the awkward thing is they're doing the same thing the other way. So they kind of meet halfway. And when you then realize, like, oh, this is awkward, you know, so then you're looking, you just continue to stretch as if I'm just stretching. So what I started to do is when I would come close to the lights, as there was a car there, especially on this side, it was easier for me. As I would get close, I would slowly recline my seat. So the person, you know, when you look, but they're a little too far back, so therefore you can't see them yet, right? So I would slowly inch up, and then I would lean my seat back, and people would be like, and there's no one there. As they would look more, I would go further back. I might say not to do it, I used to do it on a drive. But you go ahead, so finally I'm like leaning all the way back, the person will literally get out, they can't not look. You know, say, but get out. I'm going to get out, and then pop out of my seat! We got a heart attack. But realize, I don't know if you can hear people die. In any event, they never die, by the way. But in any event, so what happens? Everybody's watching everybody. Everybody's watching everybody all the time. It's crazy. Like, when you're watching someone, and as you watch them, you think, like, it's crazy, I'm watching them, and they don't even know that I'm watching them. They're looking at someone else and thinking the same thing as that person is looking at me. So this is a triangle that we're looking at each other. I even wrote it, those in Shammah, the Chol Ma'aseh, the Sibir, the Chol, everything is being seen, is being heard, is being written down. It's going to be a video in detail. I mean, think about it for a second. Do you remember, I don't want to, it's not nice to call anyone out, but I know you, right? So I can call, do you remember when you went, that time when you went in your house and you shut the door and you went to your room and you shut it, you felt like no one was watching you? Remember, we're all going to see it. Now, I don't know what you've done. I do, but get over it now. I don't know what you guys are about. There are many things that I've done I don't want my mother seeing, little of you. So the question is, how do you edit the video? How do you edit the video? Elbah, how do you edit the video? What's the answer? So in one word, my friends, you know the word comes on here, thinking child, 57 B tells that before the world was even created, God created something called Shufa. We have the ability of editing the video. Unbelievable, unbelievable merit, schus, and without this, like the Gemara says, the world would not be able to stand if we didn't have something called Shufa. We wouldn't be able to survive. Hashem gave us an opportunity that we could change something. We could take that video, and if you do it properly, and what ends up happening when they actually go and you're watching this on screen, and you sit down, and the camera guy gets comfortable, grandma sits next to you and says, pum-pum-pum-pum-pum-pum, pum-pum-pum-pum-pum-pum. She starts eating popcorn and Diet Coke, fat free, so dead free, everybody's up there. And go ahead, and as it gets to that part where you walk to the room, you're like, oh, he starts sweating, it's crazy, and boop, skips right away. The sound system there is incredible. The ending, it doesn't even go, boop, it just skips. You have the opportunity to end the video. But the question is, what is Shufa? I think it's quite misunderstood. Now, at least I'll explain to you from where I come from. I come from the five T's. Come from the big W. So, growing up in Woodmere, it's a place where I grew up. And, I don't know, I'm like, whatever, I can't speak, okay, after Rosh Hashanah. But the point is that I've seen some stuff. I've seen some stuff in my day. People have done some stuff. I learned. I mean, I went to amazing schools. I'm told I was enrolled, at least. And I was taught stuff. But I never really got it until many years later to really get, like Rabbi Benitz is saying, I remember the Mishnah Berurah shir. I just don't remember what Mishnah Berurah means, but I remember the shir. I mean, to stop and think about, what is Shufa? What does it really mean? And if I really had time to do this, which this really requires next level, you have to actually care to be bored a little bit, but to get into the depth of what Shufa is, if anyone here has ever in their life ever done Shufa. If you ever read Rabbi Yonah, or Los Pachtos de la Penedeta, on the gates of repentance, Shara Shufa, then you know it's scary. How many of us haven't even touched Shufa, let alone done it? I didn't touch it. How many of us have actually gone through the steps of what it's all about? But it's there. It's an opportunity. It's an incredible opportunity. The question is, do you want to take it? So first, let's understand some misconceptions. I want to give you some misconceptions about Shufa. So one of them is the following. There's one idea that a person had. After I was in yeshiva for a few years, I worked in a place called Brooklyn, New York. Has anyone heard of it? Anyone from Flatbush? Anyone from the Bush? Yes? You know Flatbush? So you were born in Flatbush? Amazing. Say it again. Your grandparents in Flatbush? What street? 24th Avenue? See, Sam, I watch his run. Okay, so good. Sam, it's not good for Sam. All right, so we got Brooklyn. I'm working at a place called Brooklyn on Flatbush Avenue. I don't want to go too detailed, but I was working in a place where I thought I was the only Jew there. Besides the owner, of course, because, you know, Jews don't work. But I thought I was the only Jew until one day. This is not to be, don't misunderstand, or it's not to be racist. It could be an Ethiopian, but I don't think so, right? It was me, mostly blacks, Hispanics, and me. And there was one woman who worked in the front desk, and one day came over to me and she says to me, "Hi." I was like, "Hi." And she says to me, "My Yiddish name is Peggy." So I said, "Oh, are you Jewish?" She goes, "How did you know?" Not the sharpest tool in the shed. I figured either she's Jewish or her grandmother likes Yiddish names, or both. So I said, "Okay, I see she's Jewish, totally unaffiliated." And as I'm working there, once in a while, we would end up with the same thing. I would speak there and say, like, "Why don't you check?" I said, "Why don't you check out your roots, your heritage, understand about the Mary Jews?" And she goes, oh, my puppy would cross. But let me understand what I mean. She's telling me in Yiddish that her grandmother's going to faint if she looks into Judaism. I said, "What do you mean?" And then she says the line. After all I've done, after all I've done, there's no going back. I said, "What was it you're saying?" Fady. I said, "Fady, I hear you. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you were in a red light, you might as well kill someone. Because you want to tell something wrong. There's no going back." What does that even mean? What is he doing wrong? So change your ways. What are you talking about? How many people have this thought, this notion? It's just too far. Then we have the Lambdomir. What about Acher? What about Acher? We can say that there. The Marcher did the first. Come on. Who knows? That's just an Acher. We'll do it with another. Fight. So go ahead. Rather than that, right there. We're going to answer the question. So the point is that we go ahead and say, "I've done too much. I just can't go back. After all that I've done, it's too much." Ein dover omer b'fnei hatshuva. Nothing says in the Tshuva. What about Paro? Nothing says Ramban. Look at Ramban. Nothing stands in the way of Tshuva's story. Nothing stands in the way of Tshuva. So number one. A person messed up. You did some bad stuff. Nothing stands in the way of Tshuva. A person wants to change their ways. Change your ways. How about another thing, Sasha? This is a baby. There was a rabbi named Shimon Schwab. You heard of him? Yeah. Shimon Schwab was once standing outside in Manhattan outside of a church. Not Dafka outside of a church, just happened to be outside of a church by a bus stop. And a young woman comes running out of the church and sees him and says, "Rabbi." And he goes, "Yes. I bet you're wondering what I was doing in that church." He said, "Okay, I'll bite. You know, I didn't know you were Jewish or you were in a church, but what were you, young Jewish woman, doing in that church?" So she says, "Rabbi, you understand they have this thing that we just don't have." "Well, what is it? What's it called?" "Confessional." "Really confessional? Tell me, what do you do? Well, you go in there and you say, 'Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned.'" And he says, "My dear lady, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but in Judaism we also have that. As a matter of fact, not only do we have that, we say it 3 times a day. As a matter of fact, not only do we say it 3 times a day, we say exactly those words. Slach lanu avinu ki chatanu, which literally translates as, 'Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned.'" In the book. She goes, no, you don't understand. And Christianity is actually someone listening. Because my dad, sorry to disappoint you, but we also have someone who listens. He's called God. And he actually has the ability to grant you pardon. This is something which is very real. That we have the ability to actually wipe me clean. Imagine you can wipe me clean. I don't want you guys, again, if you start to think about something you've done before, how do you get rid of that concept? How can a person go ahead and clean it up? And one of the biggest misconceptions that we get what you actually is the famous story, at least famous because I know it, of the Vilna Gaon. Of the Eliyahu of Shlomo Zalman, again, the Sfaradim Gaon from Vilna. And the Vilna Gaon was once imprisoned. He wasn't imprisoned for proper reasons. He was set up for something. But he was in prison. And in the prison, there was another Jew. This other Jew was there, and he was there for a reason. He was meant to be there. He was a murderer. And they brought them their daily food, bread and water. When they brought the bread and water, the other Jew, he starts to eat, but he forgot to do one thing. Wash his hand. He does not. Twice to the right, twice to the left, up to the wrist on BG. Okay? You're sorry, whatever. 3 times, you're not doing 12 times, whatever. So you go ahead, you wash it.
didn't wash his hands. So he turned to him. The film girl turned to this guy and says, hey, you didn't wash your hands. You didn't wash your motzi. So the guy looks at him and goes, these hands? Do you know how many people I've killed with these hands? And the film girl said, are you Spanish? He said, tell me how many people we killed with those hands. He said, many people have died with these hands. And then he told me to wash them.
Oh no, I didn't wash them.
He said, let me tell you something. When you get upstairs, you're going to be held accountable by the heavenly courts for murdering people. But guess what else is going to be held accountable for? Not washing your hands. From the beginning, how much more so? Is it Midah Tova? When it comes to the idea of being held responsible, we are held responsible for every little detail. When it comes to the idea of teshuvah, we have the ability, says Rabbi Yehuda, to compartmentalize teshuvah. Where a person says, I just, listen, I get it, I gotta change, but I'm not ready to change everything. So I'll just wait until I'm ready to change everything and then I'll do it. So I get the thing that, like, fine, I know that I should keep Shabbos. Would that be personal? Oh, you're okay. Lakewood Luke. I know that I should keep Shabbos. I know I should keep kosher. I know I shouldn't keep Lashon Hara. I know that I should run tefillin every day. I know that I shouldn't do Bo'er. Okay. I just can't help myself. I see peas and carrots. Go crazy. I use that muscle because no one knows any other malacha. You're laughing at me, don't you? And so, I don't want to be like, excuse me, I know all 17 of the malachas. All 17. Some of you confused Sidur the Pas with Sidur the Pas, if you didn't know what I'm talking about, so. Anyway, to that point that I'm saying, it's just a pronunciation, that's it, just a pronunciation. So let's understand this. A person says, I'm not ready to change my ways with everything, but I am ready to do with one thing. But I'm not ready for everything, so I'll wait till I'm ready for everything. Wrong. If you're ready to change something, change it. If you're not ready for something else, if you're ready for something to change, then change it. Whatever something else is, that's another story. You can compartmentalize your life. So what is this? I'm going to go through classic. I'm going Rambam. I'm going classic Rambam on you, three steps, four steps. I'm not pulling any Ashkenazi moves on you because we get Ashkenaz, and my friends, it's going to get a little crazy in here. This is the one time at least that the Ashkenaz approach to tshuva is a lot more intense than the Sephardic one. So you can look at it yourselves if you want, learn with your chaburas what you have to do if you actually did not there and you're Ashkenaz. A lot of it involves bees and snow and whatnot. But okay, if you want to do that, then we're going to go Sephardic. We're going to go Rambam. The Rambam comes along and tells us an amazing thing. Everyone here has heard of the Rambam. We're going to live from 11:35 to 12:04, accomplish a lot in a half hour. He comes along and he says the following. We'll get it once. Okay, so the Rambam tells us four steps. Now I'm going to break it down. We're going to save and we're going to break it down. All right, we're going to break down some misconceptions. I'm going to use it a little bit quickly to make sure you didn't mind it. Here we go. Number one, no particular order. No particular order. We use an example. It's an example which I use all the time. This is my classic go-to example. So it will not be relevant, hopefully, to most of you. But that's better because it's not as close to home and you can actually listen. You won't be too affected. There's something called a cheeseburger. Now, the Torah says you're not allowed to eat a cheeseburger. You're not allowed to eat a cheeseburger. Assuming it's real cheese and real meat, which is hard to find nowadays. But assuming you have real cheese and real meat that was cooked together, then it is innocent of the rice if a person eat that. There's very specific my words for those who learn to help us pay some pay that. All right, but we go on to the side of this. So we go on to the following idea. Person who eats a cheeseburger that was cooked together, real cheese, real meat, this is a problem. Person decides he wants to change his ways. What does he do? Four steps. Number one. Number one is SAFTB. S-A-F-T-B. Which is self-explanatory. Number two. Number two is something called charata. What's charata mean?
Regret.
Okay, we'll go with that. Regret. Number three is something known as vidui, or confession. And number four is something known as kapala la'asid. Now, when I say four, it's really not what it's for. I'm just spelling it out like that. As a matter of fact, the Rambam puts number three as the entirety. Really, the Iker Tshuva is Vidoy. We'll get that. And everything else is kind of like by the wayside. But with those Brady guys. There's a fifth step, which we'll have time to get into it. Here we go. So number one, I'm the Saffin. What is Saffin? Saffin, my friends, is step away from the burger. If a person ate a cheeseburger, number one, in the Lashon of Chazal, it's known as Aziva Sachit. You got to step away from the sin. You cannot go to God with a cheeseburger and be like, God, I'm so, so sorry, but it's just so, but I'm so sorry. You have to stop. Number one is you've got to stop what you're doing, which might be the most challenging of all the middle years, any sort of habits or things that they get involved with, you know. You might know that it's very, very challenging to stop what you got. Oh, no, wait a minute. So what happens? It gets very, very challenging to stop something when you've been doing it for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, however long a person's involved in something. For those a little older, 16 years. Right? So you're doing something over and over again because part of what you are, so it's hard. Number one, though, is to stop what you're doing. Stop it. Step away from the burger. Aziva Sachit. Clear, yes or no? Clear, yes or no? Okay, so move on. Number two. You have any questions? Pop up. Number two. This, my friend, I believe, is the most misunderstood of all of them. And that's karata. Karata means to have some sort of remorse or regret. Now let's explain what that means. I want to ask all y'all a question. I'm going to ask you a question. This is everybody in the room. We'll take a little vote. We'll vote the yes or no's. Here we go. Is it possible for a person to have karata if they understand that what they're doing is wrong, they just have no idea why it's wrong? They know that it's wrong, they're told that, they trust someone, they just have no idea why it's wrong. They do something wrong, they're told it was wrong, they didn't know it was wrong, now they're told it's wrong. They don't understand why it's wrong, and now they're told, well, now do tshuva for what you did because you did something wrong. Like, I don't know what? I don't understand why it's wrong. Is it possible for a person to have regret if they do something wrong? They know it's wrong, but they have no idea why it's wrong. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Who thinks yes? Raise your hand. Yes. Who thinks no? Who no habla inglés? Otra vez. You think I'm doing the conversation? Do I have that thing on? Okay, here we go. So I got this. One more time. Answer. Who thinks yes? It is possible to do tshuva, to feel charata, even if you have no idea. If you're not raising your hand, I'm going to call you specifically. I'm making that clear. Yes. Who thinks no? It's not possible to feel it. What do you think, giver? Because you're a father, I'm not going to call you. Is it possible? They're both good brothers. What's going on? I say both, they're all three. I mean, all five. I don't know yet. Anyway, so you get the idea. So he's there, some yes, some no. Who says no? It's not possible to feel it. Explain yourself.
They don't understand what you're doing is wrong. That's why they feel bad for it, basically.
Yeah.
But what did I do?
Yeah. Something wrong.
why are you wrong?
Okay, who says yes? It's possible. How so?
You see with kids all the time, if someone tells them it's wrong, they're
crying. Oh, you see with kids all the time, someone tells them wrong, they start crying. Oh, you're the little kids, you say. I think they're like 50 years old or something like that. It's wrong. Seriously? I'm too old for this. Okay, you see little kids, they start crying. But they start crying for another reason. Right? It's like, what do I do? It doesn't even know what happens. It's like a fear factor. Although you might be on to something, let me ask you another question. How about this one? Name?
David.
David, what? Wait, you didn't know the guy. Okay. David, ready? Second scenario. You know why it's wrong. You do something wrong, you know why it's wrong. You just think it's in Guchach. But it wasn't Guchach. Ridiculous. This is just ridiculous. You know why it's wrong, you know that it's wrong, that's just absurd. Don't put wool and linen together, oh no! What's the reason? There is none. Shut up. Do you understand what I'm saying? Is it possible to feel regret when you know why it's wrong, you just think it's ridiculous? Yes or no?
I think
no. Who thinks no? Raise your hand. Who thinks yes? Okay, here's the answer. Well, what do you think about the second question? That's okay. Welcome back. How's your trip? You enjoy yourself? Okay, here we go. The answer to both questions, David, is yes. And I'll explain. Try to imagine for a moment, okay? Let's say you have a girlfriend, Kasashon. Now, you know what? Nowadays, Kasashon. Let's say you have a girlfriend, Kasashon. Okay, don't tell me your name. Let's say this is like it's Naya. Like, no, I don't want to know because we messed up if you're. No? Okay, come here. And it says, you got a girlfriend, okay? Akala, okay? Shit, girl. Whatever you call them, SGs. And you go on a shit, which is also a guitar, Gibson SG standing. So beautiful. But you got yourself, a girlfriend. And one day you walk up to your girlfriend, and she goes to you, Dovin, I just can't, Dovin, I cannot stand. I can't stand that thing you do. I can't stand that thing. And you're like, what are you talking about? You always do this thing, and when you approach, as you walk towards me, you do this thing, like you walk towards me, you look to the left, you look to the right, and you look at me. I can't stand the left-right thing. I just can't. You're like, lady, I don't know what you're talking about, right? But she says, I can't stand it anymore. Could you please stop it? What do you say?
Okay.
Next day, you're walking towards her, not thinking about it. What happens is you see walking, left, right, and she goes, that's it! No more salad! We're done!
And you're like, why?
Left, right thing. You're like, oh my, okay. Now, assuming you still want to be with this, it's like, good girl. Assuming you still want to be with this girl. If you could go back a minute and not do what you just did, would you want to do that? Would you want to change what you did?
Yes.
You do want to change. In other words, you regret the fact that you did that?
Yes.
So in other words, you regret the fact that you just did something that you have no idea what the reason is. Is that what you're saying? So in other words, the answer is you could regret something even if you don't know why. Everybody gets what's going on here? What you got? Back right corner for me, left for you. Go. Give me the last part. Remember the first case I mentioned, you know it's wrong. I'm sorry if I didn't mention that, but I think I said, you know it's wrong, you just have no idea why. Get it? So this is not the same thing. You have no idea why. You don't even know why. You don't think it's ridiculous, you just don't know why. So here's the deal, this is what you meant. You might not have regretted the action that you did because you don't see any problem with the action itself, but you certainly regret what? Hurting her or the outcome because of the action. Everybody get what just happened? In other words, charata means what? What happens when a person does an aveira, when they do something they shouldn't do? What they did is they now cause a rift in their relationship between them and God. God, I have no idea why you don't want me to do certain things or why you want me to do certain things. I'm sorry that I didn't do what you wanted me to do, or I did do what you didn't want me to do. Why am I sorry, though? Because I see the outcome of what occurred. Now let's go into the second one, ridiculous. You do know why she doesn't like the left-right thing, but you think it's ridiculous. You know why she doesn't like it? Because when she was a little girl, she had a frog. That frog's name was Frog. And right before this frog croaked, excuse the term, it looked up, went left, went right, ribbit, and died. And you're like, lady, I was like 15 years ago, you know what I'm saying? Like, get over it. I think that's ridiculous. Assuming you still want to be with the person. If you can go back and change what occurred, what you want to do. So let's clear something. Somebody who says the following, listen carefully to this point, because those who are not listening, now's the time to listen, and if you're looking down at your laps, that better be a cell phone. Now listen carefully. Especially when they're smiling. Anyway, so, brilliant. Too much? All right, sorry. Sorry, God, is that too much? All right, sit down. Ask you before God. Okay, so go like this. Yeah. I better run out of here quick. All right. For those who are not listening, now is the time to listen. A person says the following, I think it's ridiculous that I shouldn't be able to use my cell phone on Shabbos. I think it's ridiculous that I shouldn't be able to turn a light on. I think it's ridiculous that I can't eat something. I find it ridiculous that I can't be someplace or do something or not. I find it ridiculous. So how can I have charata? You're telling me to do tshuva. There's no way for me to even come to do the tshuva because I don't feel any sort of remorse. Why would I feel remorse? I think it's ridiculous. The answer is simple. The point is not about the action. The point is about the relationship. Your real issue here is the fact that you don't really believe there's a God. Because if you stopped for a moment and understood that there's Hashem, that there's a God, and there's a relationship with you and Hashem, then you know that by doing something against that person is going to cause something negative against them, then you feel very bad for doing that thing. Does that make sense? Yes or no? Let's move on to another misconception within the idea of regret. This, my friends, is one of the biggest. A person who goes and says the following, how can I regret it? You ask someone, I've had many students here in this very building, who have eaten cheeseburgers. Some of them grew up non-religious here. And when I go ahead and I ask them, so how are cheeseburgers? Are they good? They go, oh no, they were, ugh, ew, they were disgusting. They were so gross. I'm like, seriously? I'm like, no, man, they're awesome. They're so good. I had a conversation with one of my students from somewhere. I didn't know who and where, but I don't want to say where. But I had a conversation with my student, and I had the opportunity, I was in South Africa, and I was walking along with a friend of mine, and we were walking by one of these beach areas at night, like it's like this type of open market thing, by Cape Town. And I'd never seen shrimp or prawns, as they, you know what I'm talking about. I never saw it up close. I only saw it on, like, Kasashon Amoeba with me in commercials. So I used to see, like, you know, right on, sir. You know, kind of like a figure looking good, or whatever the commercial was, you know. And then the shrimp thing. There's a reason they cut off the head. And they remove, like, all the legs, although the people that actually really like this stuff, they go straight out for the whole deal, the real deal. I saw it up close. It is, okay, the frozen sabore, but it looks nasty. I don't know who would want to put that in their mouth. It looks absolutely disgusting. So I say to my student in another country, I say to him, not my friend in South Africa, but my student in a different country, I say, well, prawns, you know, this stuff, it's disgusting. No, man, it's so delicious. Now, I was religious. He says, that's so good. I said, the legs, though. You think of the legs. The things, you know? It's like you're eating a television set. The antennas, the whole thing, you know? And they're like, dude, television, antennas, who has those anymore? I'm like, yeah, but the whole thing is just gross. He goes, nah, man, it's the legs. Oh, you suck out the slivers. I'm like, dude, this is okay. I said, who is eating chicken? Who would eat a chicken? You know what I mean? Maybe it's not like that. But anyway, you get the point, right? It's nasty. So he said, no, it's really good. I said, can you at least admit to me, look at it. Does it look appetizing? Just look, just take yourself out of the taste. He said, yeah, I guess you're right. It does look disgusting. But it's so good. So why did the student of mine here tell me that it was disgusting? Because he felt, well, if I'm doing tshuva, the only way that I can actually say I did tshuva is to feel bad about what I did and have like no contact with it, and it was disgusting, and it was horrible, and therefore whatever. Because how could it have been that I'm still doing tshuva if I don't feel that way about it? I feel great about it. What's the answer to that? So you go ahead and your dad gets himself a brand new Lamborghini Diablo. Beautiful, beautiful car. And you say, Dad, can I take it for a spin? And he says, no. So that night he's sleeping. You take the garages, you get something to remove the chain from the thing, and you can like open it, and you put the Lambo into neutral, just kind of roll it out down the block, and you kick that thing out. Then you get it after you kick it. You turn it on. And you start flying. And you are flying around the neighborhood. You are just rocking that thing, you know. Awesome. The air is just flowing in your hair. And really, the top is up, though. But you have that vision. And you just, you know, it's a six gear. Because they're not 5 speed, 6 feet. You don't even go to 5. You pop the 6. You pop that thing, straight to 6. You don't drive stick. You don't know what I'm talking about. But you look like you do. And you're rocking it. And then you come back to your block, kill the engine,
and then you roll it back. You open up the garage, and there's your dad. Same thing. And it's Heidi Whitey's. And you say, Dad, how many times have we talked about this? Assuming you have a good relationship with your dad, I charge extra of now. What am I talking about? Assuming you have a good relationship with your father, how do you feel at the moment that you just got caught? How do you feel? How do you feel?
Guilty.
Guilty. Scared. Right? You feel guilty. You feel horrible, right? You just totally destroyed his trust. Does that mean that you didn't enjoy taking out the car? Yes or no? Did you enjoy taking it? Yes or no?
Yes.
Of course you enjoyed taking it. I would do it. Well, I wouldn't, I mean, come on, I lost it, but you feel wonderful about it, but you do regret the fact that you just broke the trust, so we get that. Chalata doesn't mean that you have to think back on everything you did, and it wasn't enjoyable. It was enjoyable. It tasted good, smelled good, felt good, all good, good, good. It was just wrong. And then you recognize the fact that you've ruined this relationship, but you don't want to ruin this relationship, therefore, what is the person going to do? Understand chalata. Okay. Timing, I'm going to rip through this, finish it off, and then you can go about it. Or do whatever on your phone. Now. Okay, so go ahead. I hope the guys stop on the phones by the hotel, because there's no Siddurim there. You know what I'm saying? It's amazing. Like, it's hard to find the hotel. So anyway, I don't really love them, by the way. So now let's say, of course I love them. Not the way. So you go ahead and you see the following idea number one. Number one, my friends, they give sack. They step away from the burger. That's the idea of a single skin. You got to stop, drop, and roll. That's the girl, fire. You're not on fire. Then what you do is stop what you're doing. Number two is karata. That means I feel bad for what I did. Why do I feel bad? Maybe as you grow older and more advanced and experience, understanding, and depth, you might actually feel bad about the actual action, but at the very least, you feel bad about what the outcome of that was. I might not know this, but I do know that, God, I love you, and I feel bad the fact that I want to land like this, and I should be done from your revelation. Number three. It's always Vito. Vito is confessional. It's not fair to do the soup, but it's not fair to keep you. So that's what I'm going to do quickly. Vito is known as confessional. Confessional means you speak out that which you have done. Who do you speak it out to? You speak it out to God. If you put it on your Facebook status, that's called bragging. If you say to Hashem, that's called tshuva. What it means is that you say, Hashem, I feel very bad that I went ahead and ate that cheeseburger. It was delicious. I enjoyed every moment of it. I even benched, even though I shouldn't be disrespectful to Chesed. But even though that's the gate, at the end of the day, I still go ahead and I feel bad that I did such a thing, and I'm going to try not to do it again, as we're going to see in number four. Seek it out. Why seek it out? Why is it so important? So you look at Pachet Gitzin, the footnote, it says an amazing thing. How do you say in Hebrew speech? Dibor, give me the shoresh. Three letters, what are they? Dabet or Bez Resh Oresh. Okay, so Daber. How do you say in Hebrew thing? Spell it. Unbelievable. It's very similar. Because it's the same. What happens when a person goes and they speak? Daber Davar. Daber Davar. When you speak, it creates realities. When you speak, it creates realities. Says what happens when a person goes ahead and they speak? So we know that other Marisha called the Lachet, when a person before other Marisha actually ate from the Yitzhak, so they did the wrong thing. What happened? We know that the Yitzhak was something which was external, wasn't part of him. But then he did Naver, and then became Achar Chet, and inside of us, now we have this battle between us. Within us, the Yitzhak told Yitzhak, which is internal as opposed to external. When a person does tshuva and they seek out that which they've done, Daber, they bring out into reality that what they've done, and they get it outside of themselves, they become other Marishan Kod Mechay. Talib and Yavin was good together to high all the time. Number three is Vidoy, confessional, speaking it out. Number four, Kabbalah ala Asid. That means to accept upon yourself that you're never going to do it in the future. Accept upon yourself that you're never going to do it in the future. That means if you, at the moment that you're doing tshuva, like, I feel so bad, I'll do it tomorrow, but I feel bad, that's a problem. A person goes and says, I feel bad, but I'm going to do it tomorrow. And clearly, you don't feel bad, or not that bad. It's not something which is so real. A person who does something so bad that they say, has anyone ever done something in their life that they felt really horrible about it? Yes or no? And at the moment you realize you genuinely felt bad, yes or no? Who's had that? You've had that. And you said, I'm never going to do it again, and you were genuine, you meant it when you said it. Actually, at the time, meant it.
but then you fell into it again, you did it again. Does that mean that you didn't do tshuva? Okay, don't get, whoever said yes, don't pull that move on me in Parak Gimel of Tshuva Gemura. Nice move. But if you look at Parak Beis, there's something called tshuva. And when we talk about Parak Beis of tshuva, not tshuva Gemura, the same place, same person, same thing, but even just tshuva, that is, you can have a relapse, fall into doing the same thing again, and it still doesn't mean you didn't do tshuva. You did tshuva. If at the time you said it, you meant it, then that's called tshuva. Now there's one last step, that's between man and man. Everything we just said is beyond the lamach between man and God. If you did something between man and man, then we have step number five, that you have to make amends, you have to make up for what you've done wrong. If you want to speak with the person, ask forgiveness for that. You can do that. Not what you do, at least not what I did growing up, in whatever school I went to, where we make mechila lines. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about in Erev Rosh Hashanah, when you kind of like walk by people, are you both homie? Are you more homie? Are you more homie? The other thing, so we do these lines, I remember, it's like you walk by, fuck me, yes, 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 fuck me, no.
What?
Yes, fuck me, yes. I'm like, dude, like, that's like, you see like the deep connection. Fuck me, yes. That was beautiful. It's almost like a married couple after like 20 years, love you. It's so deep. So my friends, what do we find over here? Not the healing lines, but real. I apologize for what I've done. Be real about it. That, my friends, is called making amends or asking for the person. What happened? They don't give it to you. Send me up three times. And I know who you are, by the way. Right? Three times over and over again. Point is, at the end of the day, that's called between man and man. Two different levels of truth. There's still so much why I can't do right now. It's not fair, but I'm going to do right now, friends. Just a quick recap of everything we did. End off with one point, and then we'll bust the move. Here we go. Start at the beginning. First of all, to the wedding after the wedding, because with 10,000 in his pocket, we're going to see Shut up. Says why the noble one going to do sin the double mouth of the above your iron roy? Only Shomat? The Shomat said, what's in the double? Like, you know, the Targum, the Targum says in the last verse again, go hell is so far, it's fine, which means to say that they don't happen again. Everybody's going to hear about this. People, your mama's going to be there, right? It's going to be there, right? Grandma Ma's going to be watching Murray shut the door, we're all going to see it. But we all see it, but we always see the content, Therefore, it don't say something. Therefore, what's God do? Because he gives the ability to do tshuva. But what is tshuva? There's a person I can do after all I've done. There's no Lord, I kill a person. That's what I like. No, what we say is you've done something wrong to change your ways. Right? The only person's rabbi, you don't understand. Dude, we also have it. Sakal, we keep up tunnel. Or like we said, that idea, let it guess. And we understand the whole for killing people and for it not washing your hands. So then what is it about? When we get to the rush of it, he gets very intense. And then you have to ask him as a tshuva, maybe do it around something from the dust. Let's do it back to all four times. I'm the point of we're going to stay down the time. Four different things. Number one, cheeseburger. It was. Number one was? Saftive. Step away from the burger. Number two? Charata. What about if I don't understand? I think it's ridiculous. Can I have charata? What about if I don't understand at all? I don't think it's ridiculous. What am I saying? Can I have charata? It's of course. What about if it was just so good? Can I have charata? Absolutely, I enjoyed it, just as a in fact, I did some causes relation as I grow, as I learn more from the same one as the number three, the idea of what we do it. Confession, the person's not very clever, you speak it, bring down the ground, you go change it, but what's the purpose of speaking on number four? It's like, oh, something except the moments in the future, I can do this again, I can do it, there are challenges again, but since you know, says, I didn't know, I'm going to do it again tomorrow. That's ridiculous. But if you say that, like, I really feel that way, okay, relax, it doesn't mean a person did tshuva, unless you're very careful, but very based, understand what I'm doing, that's still called tshuva, in which case, the person goes and takes the steps, don't get caught off, understand the ideas about the relationship with the creator of the world. And ultimately, you want to have that relationship, and you want to have that relationship, and you have to understand something. Even if you don't understand certain things, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be doing it, Understand that it's all about the task. The athletes are able to build that idea, and when they're so that, then we have the ability to do it. Did we get everything? Okay, let me end up with one last point. Last idea to imagine how powerful this is. So, this guy, he gets pulled over by a cop.
when he's from Canada, gets pulled over by the Popal. What happens? The police, then police pull him over. Officers have a problem. Absolutely not. Today is Good Driver's Day. We've been following you for the past 15 minutes. You stop at every stop sign. You signal at every turn, and you're even wearing your seatbelt. You win a grand prize of $500. And the kid goes, "That's amazing. Now I can get my license." And the kid next to him was like, "Officer, don't listen to him. He's drunk." And then you hear like banging from the trunk. "Are we over the border yet?" Imagine this kid not comes in front of the judge. He walks out, judge, now residing the Honorable Judge Judy Brown. Comes out. And the kid's like, "Judge, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have done it. I will not do it again. And I'm seeing that I see right now." And then the judge goes, "Well, all right. You're off the hook. Just don't be transporting illegal citizens again, okay? Thank you for coming. Come again next." That chance, that person's getting slammed serious time. Maybe they show some remorse, they get a little off, but it's not happening. Look at the amazing, incredible, unbelievable, fantastic, unreal gift of teshuvah. A person says, number one, they stop what they're doing. Number two, they feel bad for what they've done. Number three, they speak up to Hashem. And number four, they accept upon themselves they're not going to do it again in the future. They make amends with someone. What does Hashem say? "All right. You're off the hook. Just don't do it again." We have an incredible gift called Shiva. Make sure that you take advantage. Thank you so much. Have a good one.